is your name?
Gareth Crowe.
What year were you born?
1944.
Where were you born?
Bridgend, South Wales.
What did your parents do for a living?
My mother didn't really work, but when she did work, she was in service, which is a long time ago. And my father worked for Ford Motor Company.
What is your official job title?
Textile agent.
What inspired you to get into tailoring?
It was an advertisement in the Evening Standard when I left school, and it had a slant towards clothes, and I was interested in clothes at that time. And the advert, which I remember to this day, was Savile Row Tailor requires young boy to learn all aspects of tailoring. And I thought, yes, being as I'm lost for a job, I'll go for that.
What inspired you to get into tailoring?
Clothes, fashion.
Speak a bit more about that. Why? What was you an? Were you interested in fashion and clothes?
It was 1960, and it was the beginning of fashion was beginning to, clothing was beginning to get much more interesting at that time with colours and designs, and it became popular. And that was, I was always interested in clothes. It was the beginning of the new generation, the 60s.
Tell us about your first job in tailoring.
My first job in tailoring was the boy, in every capacity. Brushing stock, making tea, running errands, and being told off.
Can you tell us about the experience of tailoring?
The experience of tailoring was extremely interesting, but also very one-dimensional, quite complex. Sewing, which was, so there was two aspects of tailoring, which was cutting and sewing. And cutting was the more, it became more interest to me than the actual sewing part.
Can you describe the area where you first started working?
West One, Cork Street, which is the next street along from Savile Row.
The atmosphere at the time,
subsequently it's become mainly art galleries, but at the time it was tailors, high class hosiery, and very, very, very suave and very posh, for want of a better expression. It was the end of Burlington Arcade, so if you walked out of Burlington Arcade, you automatically went into Cork Street, which basically was an extension of Burlington Arcade.
Can you describe, how did your career progress after you finished your training as a tailor?
Well, I left before my training finished. I left, do you want to hear this? But I suppose, yeah. I left before my training finished because I wasn't earning sufficient money, and I was had a steady girlfriend at the time and planning to get married. And at a particular time, like a lot of trades, you were waiting to step in dead man's shoes, which was very frustrating, so you had to move on. And I left the trade subsequently for 2 years.
Into what?
Completely diverse. I went and worked on a building site and earned lots of cash and worked with lots of rough people, but earned lots of money.
How did you get into fabric dealing?
Stay back there. So he's left to the building. Okay. So how did he get back in? Stay back and come to that later.
How did you get back into tailoring?
I got back into clothing via boutique. I worked for a boutique in the King's Road, and I managed that for a while. Then I moved on to a company called Hector Powell, which was part of a big organisation, which was tailoring, but of a different type. It was made to measure tailoring, and they used a specific harness to take measures to produce suits. I left there. I'm trying to keep track now. Do you want all the places I worked?
Tell us why and why you left places.
Because we'll be here till about 7 o'clock.
Right, just the main ones then. The main ones that influenced you in tailoring.
Tailoring. Let's stick, because otherwise we're going to Turnbull and Asses for 3 weeks. Then I worked for Scabau. When you've worked in the trade initially as a young person, you find that it stays with you. It's part of your blood. You enjoy the environment and the people you work with, and the fashion, the clothing aspect of it.
Yeah.
It's just basically it never ever leaves you, so you carry on looking for that position. And when I left, I went to a company, as I say, called Hexa Power, and then I was approached, headhunted, I suppose you would call it today, to go and work in Guise. And Guise, as it was Hawks at the time. Subsequently, it's become Guise and Hawks.
What did you do?
Guise and Hawks. Initially, I started off as a ready-to-wear salesman. Then I progressed and I became manager of the men's tailoring department in the Adam Room, which was a very busy, busy section of the company at the time, which we were taking approximately 50 suits a week, bespoke, including, that was approximately 35 suits, mufti suits, which is a term used for civilian suits, combined with uniforms, naval uniforms, and military uniforms. And there was about 11, I think 12 cutters at the time.
Why did you decide to work in Samurai?
Because the name conjured up magic, and it was interesting, and it was it was rather elitism, and I rather liked that. A part of me that was a part of the showing off part of me, I think, came into fore then.
Tell us about the important tools of your trade.
Important
tools of your trade.
Tools of the trade. Mm-hmm. Now, are we talking now, or are we talking about at the time?
Take us back through, maybe.
In connection with what my job, do you mean what I did? I think the most important thing is your personality and your confidence to speak to people. For example, when I was at Guise, I came into contact with a lot of famous people, which they make clothes for. You don't want names, do you? Do you?
Not a list, but you
know. No, I mean, for example, the most interesting, Sir Laurence Olivier, for example. And we done this clothes for the Avengers, the original Avengers. Patrick McNee and Gareth Hunt, but they were just isolated. But there was a cross section of international and wealthy people, which was also a very important reason why most people are in this trade, because they meet very, very successful people in many, many diverse areas.
How did you go about starting to make contacts in this area?
I didn't really make contact. People knew me because this area is very close-knit. It's very it's like upmarket Coronation Street. Everybody knows everybody and makes stories up. And and it still applies today. If there's a rumour going around, whether it's good or bad, it tends to move on. So hence my reason for going to Guise and Hawks originally, because I got approached to work there. And then I subsequently became manager at Guise and Hawks, the tailoring department.
Take us through your typical working day.
At Guise. Are we talking about now?
Let's stay historical and then we'll come to that.
Are we talking about now? Are we talking about now or then?
Let's try and keep it back there and then we'll come to what he does now.
Because, well, what I do now would be very boring. I talk to... The most important thing at Guise was to check the appointments for the day and make sure the suits were available for fitting through various cutters, and if they weren't, for them to actually chase the tailor up in order to get them ready for the man that's coming in that day or the next day. Then to remind customers that their suit would be ready for a fitting, first fitting, or to be finished, or it was completed. Then it was to order fabric, to check fabric, to look at stuff to see if there's anything that I could very carefully criticise without upsetting anybody.
What year was this at your Guise?
Oh God, I'm trying to think. It would have been not that 19. That was the Vogue thing was 1976. It would have been about 1975, something around about that.
Describe the atmosphere of this area in 1975.
The atmosphere of this area at that particular time was quite severe. It's very quite serious, actually. There wasn't much colour around, as in the shops, but it was the beginning. So people started to evolve as tailors with more fashion and more style, and colour evolved, but... At that particular time, Savile Row was quite an austere and serious place, and there wasn't a great deal of... people pretended to be a lot of camaraderie, but there wasn't, to be quite honest. They were very polite to each other without helping each other, if you want the truth.
So what was the relationship then between people? If they weren't polite,
It was very nodding. It was good morning. For example, going back to the first shop that I worked at, which was a company called Garden and Woolley in Cork Street, there was a tailor directly opposite. And this particular owner of this tailor used to look over his window and look at my boss at the time, and they looked at each other for several years and they never ever spoke to each other once, which I found quite amusing in today's world, but it was fact, that's the way it was. And no one thought anything more of it. But that's taking it to extreme, but there was this atmosphere. It wasn't a bad atmosphere, it's just the way it was.
What was your most memorable job with a customer?
Most memorable job with a customer? My most memorable job was sitting there and talking to St. Laurence Olivier.
Why?
Because he was obviously one of the most famous actors in the world, and also, and he was such a humble man, and he had skin cancer at the time. I hope you didn't pull this. And he wore white gloves. And he had a chauffeur-driven Morris Minor, the old-fashioned one. And he was and the first question he said to me, you've probably heard of me. He said, well, tell me about you. And I was like a young man from southeast London. And I thought, I don't really know how to follow this up. And here this man was an international star. He had a blazer which was made. He was in the Naval Reserve in the war, and he wanted a replica blazer made to just for that reason. That's the reason he went.
Tell us about any challenging experiences that you had with customers.
Many of the challenging experiences were trying to get money out of people. They were dissatisfied because at that particular time, Savile Row tailors were very embarrassed to ask for deposits and money. Yeah. And that used to cause quite a few problems at the end. And if a customer wasn't happy with it and he hadn't paid any money, he had nothing to lose. Those days have changed completely now, I would think. Anybody, probably 50%. And I can remember seeing someone going to the Palladium, and this is a famous person again, but to collect money, and it was absolutely a nightmare. Particularly when we got in his car and he had a ticket outside to come back to the shop to play an American Express on his American Express. That was very amusing, but quite daunting at the time.
How do you feel about the division of labour within the trade?
The division of labour? I think the division of labour now is changed quite dramatically. The actual tailors, the top tailors, as in coat makers, waistcoat makers and trouser makers, there aren't so many, but the ones that are, there's been a slight change, not power is the wrong word, there is more evenly, but the cutter was God before, but today, the cutter and the tailor have more of an equal standing. They both realise they both need each other.
Tell us about how you think Savile Row has developed as far as technology.
Slowly but surely. But basically, technology, it takes a long time for technology to actually go. Because it's such an old trade and business, they're very slow to make change. They're rather perverse to make change. They do not like change of any, unless they have to. The main change that they've had to make is the difference in weights of fabric, because fabrics have come down in weight considerably in the last 40, 50 years. Therefore, technology, as in making, has had to adjust to the weight of fabric.
What are the advantages and disadvantages of specialising in tailoring?
As in having this bespoke suit made?
Yeah.
Sorry, that really what the question you were asking?
What are the advantages and disadvantages of being specialised in that trade as a tailor?
If you are a sewing tailor, well, the advantages are that once you've learnt the trade, which is 5 to 6 years, once you've learnt that trade and you've evolved, you've got a job if you're reasonably good for life. And that's something that, and you can do it also, it's a job that you can actually do till late in life because it's not a physical job as such.
Yeah.
And it's also, it's artistic yet practical at the same time.
What are the disadvantages?
The disadvantages are, I would say that you have to work quite considerable hours, long hours, in order to earn a good living.
Looking back, is there anything that you would have done differently?
It's just over everything, is it now? I don't like looking back. It's pointless looking back, to be quite honest. There are things that we all look back, not you, you're very young, but there's no point in looking back, really. The only reason I would look back if I know what I know now, but there's no point in doing that, because it was what it was, and you do deal with what's happening at the time. But the atmosphere of the business now has changed so much that it's much more relaxed and carefree. I'm not saying that's good or bad, but it's totally different to when I first came in the trade.
Maybe ask him to talk now about what he does now and how we got into that.
Okay. What inspired you to become a fabric dealer?
What decided me? Well, when I worked at Gives, my colleague at the time, there was a company, an established company, that was actually falling by the wayside for different reasons. And we both decided for a change we'd like to work for ourselves. So we formed our own company for 10 years, and financially, in order to run a woolen company or woolen merchant, you need a great deal of input and money and finance all the time, which we weren't prepared to do. It was impossible. And subsequently, once I was in that, I worked for various companies, Scottish companies, and now I work for a top Italian company for 16 years, and I'm very, very happy. And it's something that I thoroughly enjoy. The different weights, the different types, the different styles, the different creations, the different looks. It's a complete change. And this has changed dramatically over the last 40 to 50 years.
Tell us about your first job in fabric dealing.
My first job was when I left Gives and I worked my own company. There were three partners at the time. The two partners that I worked with had started, and we decided to do it gradually, and I joined them after 6 months. And that was it. And I was the rep. I was the face of the company. Ugly as that may be, but I was the face. One was a practical person. I was the face. And one was the administrator.
What are the qualities that a person needs to be in this business?
It's just the whole business.
Or in your business?
My business, it would be to be able to... So basically to understand the business, the customer, the type of business the customer does, which varies considerably. They're all suits, but they've all got their own different look, their different style, their different personality, their different characters. And the understanding of that. Some of that takes time. Some people don't understand it and never will. But that's an effort. There's something you either learn or you've got it. It's a gift that you've got.
Where do you see the future of someone?
Well, that's a big question. Savile Row will go on forever and ever, but the prophecies of Savile Row changing have not really happened. Bespoke tailoring will always be alive, Savile Row tailoring as it's known, but shops as in made to measure and ready to wear and general shirts, ties will actually, in a lot of cases, subsidise tailoring. But there will always be a niche for proper Savile Row classical tailoring.
What would you say Savile Row, this whole area, what would you say it stands for historically and now?
Historically, it's the only street, I would say, in the world that people associate with clothes, tailoring. It's the only street where everything is put together without any... In most countries, in most places in the world, areas are spread out for clothes or fashion, maybe under one row, but this is the only street, as far as I'm aware, that's completely tailoring. Yeah. And it works. Because each tailor's shop has got a certain different look. People never used to walk down Savile Row before. Ordinary people never used to walk down, because they had no reason to. But people walk, mainly because there's Abercrombie and Fitch at the end of the road, I think. Yeah. But people now would walk down Savile Row because it's a thoroughfare to other places. But otherwise, people wouldn't, unless you were very wealthy or very famous, because there's no reason to.
Okay.
Ready?
Yeah.
What was What's one of your favourite stories or couple stories that you've had in Savile Row as far as working with like different people, like celebrities or?
I'm not good for me to mention names, is it? I mentioned the Laurence Olivier thing, the funniest thing. I was going back to when I was at Gives. I don't want to get me into trouble or anybody else into trouble. You know this because you can take this out, can't you?
Well, don't say anything that you don't want in the film.
Well, I don't know. Well, you decide. You can take it out after I said it, can't you? Probably the most amusing thing at the time was when I was at Gives and Hooks, we made clothes for Bruce Forsyth for a one-man show, which was a dress coat and tails and obviously a very specified garment. And he hummed and hawed. He didn't pay on time. And it was, as always with these people, they leave it to the last minute. So he was on stage the next day and he wanted it delivered. But we wouldn't deliver it as a company until we got paid the balance. Yeah. So they decided I would be the person to go over to the Palladium and actually deliver it and take and get the balance. Well, Mr. Forsyth wasn't in a particularly good mood that day, and he swore and he chanted. And it wasn't me he was shouting, he was just shouting, ranting and raving generally. And he said, you want paying? I asked him, I said, I can't leave it with you until you pay, which is quite difficult when you have to. So he said, I can't use the word expletives that he used, but you can guess the rest of it. So anyway, he decided American Express would pay. He wanted to pay American Express. He had to go back to the shop in Gee. This is the Palladium. He had to go back to number one, Savile Row. And then when we got outside after his rent and raving, he got a ticket in his car, in his Rolls Royce, which added to the amusement to me. I mean, I was smiling at this time because he'd burst his blood vessel. Now he's jumping up and down. So we got back in the car. I think he was driving it himself. I don't think he had a show. And we got back and then he subsequently paid and everything was, but that was quite an amusing, that went on for a long, long time.
Would you say that was the most difficult thing, getting them
to? Not really, no. The most difficult thing is actually, always is actually, in this particular time, is actually asking, getting money from people if they're dissatisfied, because it's a matter of opinion. If someone is not happy, that might be their opinion. And they decide they're not going to pay, well, things have to be negotiated accordingly. But there's lots of people that I've met that have been very, very pleasant and very, very nice. But there have been some people that are very make life uncomfortable. Yeah. But that name drop, it's pointless, but might drop your names. But but today the people ask for deposits now, substantial deposits. That part of it's changed. But the tradition was, this is quite good actually, tradition was years and years ago, people, aristocracy and rich people always paid their tailor last. Yeah. That was part of the tradition and the history of it was. It was an aristocrat, God knows why, because they were trade and they were looked down upon. But that's the way it was, you know, that's the way it was. And they were always paid last. And people were embarrassed, tailors were embarrassed to ask for money for a deposit. Madness, which it was. And I can remember when I first, going back to when I was first in the trade, people used to have, which was called a standing order of maybe £5 a month and a suit. When I first started in the trade in Cork Street, suits were in guineas. Do you know what guineas are? £1, one shilling. Everything was priced in guineas. And when I first started in the trade, the suits were 72 guineas. That was the first price. Now a suit in Savile Row can be approximately £4,000. I mean, it does vary. I'm sure you found that out. But that was the price, 72 guineas. And everything, there were certain things that were in guineas. Have you ever heard of guineas? It was £1 bunch. God knows why. It was one of those things that...
So all of this was going on all over London and particularly close by in Carnaby Street.
Well, Carnaby Street, yes.
So what was the relationship like between Carnaby Street and everything that was going on there and Savile Row, where the suits are, seem to be, the atmosphere is a bit more staid, a bit more traditional. How did those two, they're so close.
They were close, but there was an acceptance because the first actual fashion tailor, one of the first, was Tommy Nutter. This is the Tommy Natter type. And the guys that used to work for Tommy Natter cut my suits. Now, he was the first to break through the traditionalist in making for films like the Beatles and Elton John and people like that and Cilla Black. He was the first. They were the first breakthrough. And what they used to do, they would never admit it, but there was John Michael, which was the end of Savile Row, was a bespoke tailor, yet a boutique at the same time. It balanced the two out. What they used to do, they used to glean ideas. Tailors used to glean colours and combinations off of boutiques. They would never admit it, but they did. You know, because they used to get... Because a boutique, when things evolved in fashion, there was lots of colours that tailors would never dream about. But what they did, they modified them, maybe used them in a different way. You know, it was complete different ends of the spectrum, but it was very, it did it. I mean, when you was living through it, that sounds like a war, it wasn't a war, but when you was living through it, you didn't take, you know, it's the way it was, you know, it's the way everything was. But boys, people became very fashion conscious in the beginning of the 60s, because everything was grey and austere up to that time, and very serious, and men... Yeah, men used to have three or four suits. They used to have one for work. They used to have a best suit for weddings and funerals, one for work and one for doing the garden. They used to go on rotation. That's how it went. Ordinary people. I'm not talking about Savile Row people now. I'm talking about the ordinary working man.
How about you? Well, tell us about your...
I never had a garden. Sorry?
Tell us about your... So you were interested... What was your fashion then in the 60s and 70s?
Well, I've got a few pictures here, actually.
Well, I do. Tell us about them, and then.
The fashion. Of course, you had extreme. Everything was extreme at that particular. When I was a mod, it was very narrow. Everything was narrow. They had box jackets, short jackets, covered buttons. That was box. That was and button down collars, Ben Sherman shirts, which are fashionable now, brogues, and Ivy League and stay press trousers. That was the fashion. But then, when you moved into Savile Row, everything became much more structured, as in colour. For example, tailors at that particular time did not have bunches. You see the bunches you see over there, there was three or four, but all they did, they kept stock, which was rolls of cloth, and they sold from stock. They didn't sell from bunches at all. There was one bunch called Tonic, which I'm advertising somebody else now, and that was a lightweight fabric, and it wasn't lightweight at all. But the Beatles wore a suit, but it wasn't there. It was a lightweight suit for the Royal Command performance called Chris Bear, another company I'm dropping that out. And everybody wanted, I had a suit of it and everything. And my friends used to say, like that sort of stuff the Beatles wore at the film premiere. But the main change in fabrics and in making is the drop in weight. Everything got lighter and lighter through central heating, cars, kept people travelling more in cars. That's the main difference. And obviously the drop in weight of fabrics also evolved in tailoring, made tailoring a totally different thing to do, much more difficult, much more specific.
So what would you say are the sort of main things, you sort of, when you look back on your life on Savile Row in this area, the main things you kind of look back fondly on?
Mainly the people in the trade. My first boss is still my oldest friend now, after all these years. So we're talking at 54, 55 years. He's my oldest friend, and we're still friends. And people, Philip Parker, who I think you've met at Paul's.
Yeah.
Well, Philip was an apprentice coat maker, and he used to come and ask me for work and trimmings. Don't repeat that. But Philip, people like that, because the people that have been in the trade a long, long time, we all acknowledge each other and we know each other. We know our good points, our bad points, and we know each other. And it's sort of it's an acceptance of people. You know, people like each other. There are people who dislike each other, obviously, but generally people get on with each other in the trade. You know, I don't know whether it's the same in other businesses. I don't know. There is an element of bitchiness, but not much.
Is it easy to keep friends?
Yes, I think so, yeah, because everybody's got a story. And what happens is when someone leaves a company, they normally join a rival company. Because there was a law, I don't know, well, not a law, but an unwritten law, that if you left the company, you couldn't work within a certain distance from where when you left the company. But I think that was taken to court and proved it cannot be put worked, it cannot work.
Yeah.